Hello and welcome to the latest special edition of the MFC podcast. Today myself and Gordon Reid are going to go over the 10 worst and 10 best Englishmen at Fir Park. We're going to go from the 2009-2010 season and we're going to end this at the 2018-2019 season. So there won't be any before then, obviously. There won't be any after. So there won't be any players that signed in the summer ahead of the 19-20 season. Gordon, welcome along, mate. It's been a trying week, but I hope you're well, and thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, cheers. Thanks for having me.
What we're going to do is we're going to finish with a positive, so we'll start with the negative and the 10 worst English players. In our opinion, this isn't a character assassination. We're just basing this totally in footballing abilities to have signed for Motherwell since 2009-2010. Gordon, what I'm going to ask you for is your player in number 10, 9, 8 and 7. And then after that, we'll group it in threes. So, who have you got at number 10? So, this would be the 10th worst.
Yeah. I've got to say, I found some of these names that I've put in just at the higher end of the worst signings a wee bit harsh. There's a few that I've actually found some of these quite difficult to do. But at number 10, I've got Josh Law. Number 9, I've got George Newell. Number 8, Ellis Plummer. And number 7, George Long.
Okay, so give us a wee bit. Josh Law is an interesting one.
To be honest with you, that was probably the, when I was talking about it, I find it quite hard to put some people in. He's probably the hardest. Probably quite harsh on Josh Law. Obviously started off very well with those two goals against Jarnan in the Europa League. And maybe that kind of false precedent for the way his Motherwell career was going to go. I thought Josh Law was okay. He obviously started off as a kind of attacking midfielder and converted to right back later in his middle career. And I tempted to say maybe he was slightly better when he moved back to the right back position. But look, he was fine. He was dependable enough. I just didn't think he did. You know, I think I've not really missed him massively, let's put it that way, in the sort of two or three seasons he's been away. Yeah, a bit harsh to include him, but you just narrowly made the cut, I think, yeah.
And who did you have at number 9, sorry?
Number 9 was George Newell. The reason George Newell and Ellis Plummer pull at number 8, you could probably group the two of them together, to be honest. They were signed with a very low expectation, I guess, certainly in George Newell's case. They came in initially to join the youth or the under-21 team, whatever you want to call it, at that particular time. It was very sort of low risk and low. Imagine he wouldn't be on huge wages either. Likewise, I think to some extent, Ellis Plummer, I know he's probably a bit more experienced than George Newell, but I think they weren't signed as any more than squad players. George Newell, when he did play occasionally, and that's would have been two seasons ago now, I think, he just didn't maybe look really as if he was quite cut out to be playing in the Scottish Premier League. I thought maybe we'd get a wee bit more time to sort of stay and maybe develop it. I know he went out on loan, didn't he, as you spoke about in the last podcast, to Albion Rovers. But no, I never really worked out for him. But as I said, it was a low risk sign in the first place. Ellis Plummer, I actually don't think I've ever seen him play in a Motherwell jersey, to be honest. I know he played that game up at Ross County when he came on as the fourth sub in the League Cup game. Obviously a wee bit unfortunate with injury as well, so yeah. I mean, there's not much to say, not much to be overly critical about Ellis Plummer, but I don't think, certainly not what I've seen of him. But yeah, obviously was one that didn't work out.
And just remind me again, sorry, I am listening, I can assure you that, but number 7?
Number 7 was George Long, who was just a keeper who never really inspired a great deal of confidence in me. Obviously, he came in on loan from, I think it was at Sheffield United.
Yeah, that's right.
Season under Ian Barraclough when we were obviously fighting to stay in the league. We were obviously quite low in goalkeeping options that season. In general, I think it was him and Dan Twardzik, I think, were battling out at one stage, weren't they? As I say, just when we were obviously fighting to stay in the league that season, 2014-2015, I know obviously ended up in our favour by winning the playoff against Rangers. I just thought he kind of looked a bit dodgy on occasions. I remember him losing a goal. I think it was actually ended up being a Tony Straker own goal down at Rugby Park. And again, we actually, I think, went on to win, albeit. But I don't know if what he's actually doing now, if he's maybe carved out a career in English lower leagues or not, but he was just a keeper I could never really take to, if I'm being totally honest.
Oh, that's all fair. He did have a decent game in the playoff at Ibrox. He made a few.
No, I know. And that was, again, that was in my thinking. He might have been, again, I think all these four, the four I mentioned are a wee bit, so I feel a bit guilty putting it, mentioning them in this kind of bracket, if I'm being honest. But as I said, it was a harder task than I thought it would be.
Yeah, and I certainly feel quite bad about my four, and none of my first four in my list actually featured on yours. At number 10, I've went for Adam Cummins, who was a good lad, and I just don't really think he was cut out for top flight football, to be perfectly honest with you. Had a good debut and a win over Aberdeen when Stevie Hamill scored an absolutely fantastic goal to win the game. Then it really tailed off. He was quite rash, he was quite erratic. I think he was sent off a couple of times during his career at Motherwell. He was one that never really inspired a great deal of confidence. He's dropped down the leagues and done fairly well. I think he was at Stranraer last season, and I think he may have been the captain as well, actually. But it's just not really, it's not a reflection on the person or the fact that he didn't put in 100%. It was just, for me, he wasn't much of a footballer, to be honest. At number 9, I've went for Jonathan Page, who shares a few similarities with Adam Cummins in the sense that he got a handful of opportunities. Again, didn't look like he was cut out for the level, and he kind of disappeared off the scene. He did come on and score the goal against Alisson, the third goal, and the victory at Fir Park, but nah, it just wasn't for me. There was kind of stories that were about the time of him going in and telling Stuart McCauley didn't feel like he was good enough for that level. And to be fair, I wouldn't really disagree with him, to be honest. It wasn't absolutely atrocious by any stretch of the imagination, but again, I just don't think he was a player that was cut out for the top flight. And so it has transpired. It's not one that's come back to bite us in any sort of way. At number 8, I've went for Dean Brill. A goalkeeper that came in from Inverness Cali to be a backup, I think. That's very much how it transpired. Not a great deal of opportunity for the guy. It's his kind of lack of contribution that's found his way onto this list. And he departed quite quickly after arriving as well. I'm not 100% sure if he actually played any.
I don't think he did. And I think, to be honest, that was probably the only reason I probably just didn't include him. I just ruled him out probably on that basis. But no, I don't think he played any first team games at all.
So I'm very sorry if you're listening, Dean. You possibly don't deserve to be in the worst 10 Englishmen of the last 10 years. But in terms of contribution, it was zero, so he gets in on the back of that. Number 7, and it's another one that I don't feel great about, to be honest, but I've put Wes Fletcher in at number 7. Debut goal at Inverness. He was in front of Louis Moult at that point, and it looked like he would be the one that kicked on. He got a bad injury in the following game against Dundee United, and never got near the level that we kind of hoped that he was going to discover. It tailed off badly. He moved on. He never really kicked a ball after his first goal, and it was quite disappointing to see. Injuries hampered him throughout his time at Motherwell. Again, another one that I'd be quite keen to stress. Was it never really kind of stunk the place out? It just wasn't up to much.
Yeah, I've got Wes Fletcher somewhere in my top 10 as well. So I've been even harsher on him than you have.
well, there you go. I've kind of tried to clarify everyone with, but they weren't quite as bad as I'm making out. Fletcher was one that I think it's maybe the expectation that came with him. And
yeah, definitely. Such a good start as well.
Yeah, even that Dundee United game, he looked sharp, he looked hungry, and sometimes an injury can knock a player back, and that certainly seemed to be the case with him. Now, Gordon, I'm going to ask for your next three picks. So your number six through to your number four.
Right, well, number six is Wes Fletcher, so there's not much else to say, I guess, on that one that we haven't just touched on. But yeah, my reasoning was quite similar, I guess, to yours. Not so much that he was a particularly poor player, far from it. It was just the fact that we ended up being such a disappointment after a good start with the goal up at Inverness. As you said, obviously the injury against Dundee United came at the wrong time for him. Obviously, Barraclough lost his job not long after, and Mark McGee clearly didn't fancy him as much as Barraclough did, and he chose to go away with other options, basically. And as you could probably see from his social media presence in the couple of years after it, he didn't take that decision too well, I don't think. It's just a more disappointment. I think he could have been a good player for others if circumstances had worked out slightly differently, but as it was in the end, he was a player that came up with a relatively decent, I think, reputation in the lower leagues in England, but obviously for those kind of reasons it didn't really work out for him.
He's now at Lancaster City on loan from Chorley Town. So
it's fair to say he's maybe not went on to bigger and better things then. So
no, certainly not.
Count ourselves lucky in that one. Number five is Callum Higginbotham, who, again, I probably need to explain my reasoning slightly on this one, but I just remember Callum Higginbotham from his time at Falkirk, and he just looked like an absolutely cracking player, and I was really, really excited to see him sign for us. He's signing very quickly, I think, at Trump, but if I'd be brought Faddy back about a couple of weeks later on loan, be signed Callum Higginbotham and then signed Faddy back a couple of weeks later, which kind of put him down the pecking order. I mean, that goal against Hibs very nearly could have had him sitting in the best top 10, let's remind about the worst 10, but no, it just never obviously worked out from him. You could see probably his confidence took a bit of a dip when he wasn't getting game time. He was obviously getting a bit frustrated as well. And again, it just never worked out for him, unfortunately, which is a big disappointment because, as I say, I think he was a player who, again, at a different time, a different sort of play, might have worked out a bit slightly better for him, and he might have went on to have a good career with us. Obviously, in his return matches with Thistle, he was quite determined to show us what we missed out on, and was quite keen to get it up the Motherwell fans as well, but hard to blame him too much for that, I suppose, because he never really got much of a look in under Stuart McCall towards the end of that season. And number four is Louis Lang. Again, somebody who came, I thought, I've obviously never seen him play at that time, but he came along from Nottingham Forest with quite a promising reputation. I think he'd played for maybe England under-20s or something like that. I seem to remember Stuart Pearce was the Nottingham Forest manager at the time. It was quite reluctant to leave, let him leave to come up to us. So that kind of boded well, but it just never worked out for him, did it? He'd obviously get sent off in his debut, I think, didn't he? You could tell there was potentially a good player there. He certainly had all the raw attributes. He was tall, sort of strong, maybe relatively quick as well. But as I said, it never really happened for him. This is a later career under Mark McGee. He kind of started to play a couple of different. I remember him playing as a holding midfielder against Celtic in Mark McGee's first game. And then sort of latterly, I think he was playing with either right back or right wing back even. We tried him in a few different areas and it just never kind of worked out for him. And again, that was a kind of a disappointment because came up with quite a relatively high reputation, but it never really worked out.
Was that your last one there?
That's me down to four. Yep.
Great. Superb. Okay, again, there was a wee bit of differentiation between mine and yours. Number six for me is Alex Fisher, who I talked about in a previous podcast that we did. A striker that didn't score goals, missed some big chances in his early games and never was able to kick on from there. He's been down south and done absolutely fine. A player that It wasn't an inspiring signing to begin with. I think when you buy a player from another Scottish team, he felt like he was a player that had been about a bit, and you kind of hoped that he would maybe just have that bit of experience and know-how. But when he didn't get the monkey off his back, so to speak, early on, it just never ever looked like happening for him, and his time at Fir Park was very short-lived. So that's my reasoning for Alex Fisher. Above him, I've went for Kieran Kennedy, who, for me, was just a bomb scare, to be perfectly honest. He was hot-headed. He wasn't particularly good in the ball. His positional sense wasn't great. He was a young guy, but he was so prone to mistakes. And at a time where we were susceptible to taking a few hammers, really, Kieran Kennedy was never far away from the starting 11 when we took most of these hidings. Just not very good, to be perfectly honest. And he's one on this list that's played more than many of my picks. So I would say, actually, possibly in terms of appearances, it'd be Adam Cummins or Kieran Kennedy that have made the most appearances. I didn't rate him whatsoever, to be perfectly honest. And very deserving of his fifth place in the list, I would say. After that, I went for George Newell at number four. George Newell, as you have already discussed, the fact that he came in from Bolton, it wasn't Blackburn, as I've said in the last one, he's come in as a youth player, and we've bought into potential, but he quickly got elevated into the first team reckoning, and there was a wee bit of hope that at that point he was going to kick on and really make an impact. He featured in the bench quite a lot, and then the injuries kicked in, and it was almost as if he was made of glass. He would come back from a long-term injury, and then he'd be out straight away again. It must have been incredibly frustrating for him. He got his chance at Albion Rovers, had to drop down the divisions, and then that was him, really, in terms of his career in Scotland, released at the end of the season. And Scott McClure mentioned Albion Rovers wanted to keep George Newell on, but I'm sure when he headed north of the border, he didn't expect to be contemplating a contract offer from Albion Rovers. With no disrespect to them, he'd come to a top flight team. He was going to be given an opportunity to show what he could do in the youth setup. Obviously did that very quickly, and then wasn't able to progress when he did get that chance. So it's possibly harsh in the basis that he didn't have many first team opportunities, but when he did, he wasn't able to take them either. And then the injuries, it was just a frustrating 2 years for George, and that's the reason he ranks so highly, I guess. We'll move on to the top threes now. I've got a funny feeling we're going to agree with a couple here, but we'll start with your number three.
So number three for me was somebody you've just mentioned in your last group of players, and that's Alex Fisher. It just never worked for him. The only reason I feel bad about this one is because he did come across as a really decent guy through social media. But yeah, although I guess you said he came with not a lot of excitement because he came from Inverness, to be fair, he did score quite a few goals against us the season before. He did join, and maybe there was a wee glimmer of hope, certainly for myself, that he could go on and do a job for us. But I think the problem was it was just one of those ones where he never got off the mark early, and I think you could just see his confidence slowly decrease as the games went on. You could have maybe always felt again that just if he just got a wee bit of rub of the green, he could get a goal, we could have been off and running. But I think he only lasted 6 months with us, and as time sort of gradually wore on, he seemed to just look a poorer and poorer player throughout that time. And he seems to have actually went on and done quite well down south. I know, again, this is something you mentioned in the last podcast, but yeah, it was just one that just, can safely say, it never worked out. You want number two and number one as well?
I would love them, yes, please.
Cool, right. So number two is Nathan Thomas. Nathan Thomas, I think what frustrates me most is that he's kind of went on to have quite a good career down south. Certainly, we didn't see any resemblance of that in his time at Fir Park. I think what frustrated me most from Nathan Thomas was that's a transfer window when Barraclough first came in, and it just seemed like a scattergun approach to bringing players in. For whatever reason, we brought Nathan Thomas in and just didn't play him, really. I don't remember speaking, I think, to yourself about a game you've seen him play in the reserves when he just looked an absolute mile off it, even at that level. So, hard to fathom that a player who did as poor for us, I guess, ended up going on to do so well down south in the last couple of years. But, yeah, he's my number two. My number one, I don't think it'll come as any surprise, is Jacob Blythe, who, it's fair to say, just you could probably write a book in his year or so at Fir Park, and absolutely none of it to do with anything he did in the park. Obviously, injuries didn't help him, I guess, but the few occasions he did play and did get minutes, he didn't look good enough, to be perfectly honest, for that level of football. Obviously, left the club, in quite an acrimonious and unusual fashion, it's fair to say, as well. And I know you should probably never judge somebody on their social media output, or maybe you should, but it just came across an absolute prick as well, to be perfectly honest. So, yeah, that's why Jacob Blythe's my number one.
Right, okay, well, I have went for Ellis Plummer at number three, and that's based on the fact that he was on loan from Man City, so I thought that he had to be an absolute superstar, as it turned out. I can't even remember him. I can remember him being the fourth sub, but I can't remember him being either way good or bad in that appearance, but it's just business, Ellis, and you found yourself at number three when you could have quite easily been at number 10, to be honest. But yeah, he's got elevated status because of where he came from. There certainly isn't much doubt, though, that he was a lone player that didn't work out. My top two actually match yours completely. Nathan Thomas is the archetype lone player that just could not be arsed. He did not want to be there whatsoever. Marvin Johnson was a signing that looked like it was going to fall through, so Nathan Thomas was brought in. Then we managed to get Marvin Johnson, and Nathan Thomas was already in a bad spot from that point onwards, really. That reserve game that you were talking about, it was atrocious. He put a free kick over the stand at Airdrie, and that was his last act before getting hooked. And the kind of nonchalant way that he went about everything, it was just really poor. It was so surprising to see him really kind of forge on and become £2.5 million or something like that he went to Sheffield United for? So, certainly, well, there's this crazy transfer fees down south, obviously, but there's no doubt that there was some sort of a player in there. We just never got to see it. Number one, it had to be Jacob Blythe. Selfies at his grand's funeral, the hippie crack, the Geordie Shore girlfriend, it was all there. It was quite a larger-than-life personality. Just even by these three things that I've just described, you can obviously tell that, but there was even near a footballer. It was a farce from start to finish. It was a complete and utter farce. The fact that he'd come from I'm sure he came in the same season that Leicester won the Premier League.
Yeah.
And he'd joined from Leicester. I dare say that if Claudio Ranieri had kept Jacob Blythe and decided he was going to utilise him in some way in the first team, then Leicester's fate may have been somewhat different to what actually transpired that season. It was nowhere near our level. I don't know how he found himself onto the books at Leicester City to begin with.
Be interested to see, do you know where he is just now? Is he still kicking about somewhere?
I'm sure at the end of last season, because I quickly googled Wes Fletcher, and he actually joined Lancaster City in a month's loan in August 2018. His Wikipedia has not been updated. But Jacob Matthew Blythe has actually signed for Macclesfield.
Oh, Alright, okay.
Signed in the summer. I'm just going to have a look at the soccer base page for him as well. Let's have a look. Oh wow, he's actually played quite a lot of games. He's played 22 times for them this season. He scored one goal, and that was a last minute equaliser against Leyton Orient and a 1-1 draw.
Maybe I've got them all wrong.
No, I don't think you have. But the one goal in League Two this season kind of tells you all you need to know. He's after Motherwell, he went to Barrow, where he scored three goals. To be fair, at Macclesfield, he's not actually made one start in the league. He's made 19 sub appearances. So maybe his record isn't quite as bad as we're making out, but. Yeah, he was dug meat and fully deserving of a matched place of number one. And the worst English signings. Yeah, well, the top two were replicated. Now, the top 10 is much harder, to be honest. We talked a wee bit before we started this. We don't know how our lists play out, but I gave you a wee spoiler and someone I thought I had been really harsh on to leave out. In fact, I would go as far as to say there's two that I felt quite torn about, but they've missed out on the basis that we've had some fantastic English players over the last 10 years on display at Fir Park. In fact, really kind of the top 10 is of great quality, all in positions all over the park as well. What we'll do again is we'll follow the same format. Your number 10 to your number 7, then I'll give you my 10 to 7, and then we'll do two groups of three to finish us off, okay?
Cool, yep, sounds good. Yeah, this was quite difficult. I should probably echo what you just said there. Certainly our plundering of the English market in recent times has turned out quite well, but my number 10 was Peter Hartley. He's had a stop-start spell to his... His Motherwell career obviously came in on loan from Blackpool, had a really good start at the start of the season. We reached the two cup finals. Certainly had quite a prolific start as well in terms of, I think he maybe get three or four goals in his first few matches. And just looked like a really good sort of no nonsense defender who could obviously help out in terms of. Getting goals other side of the park as well, but obviously got that injury. And he would maybe, if he'd kind of kept that form going prior to his injury, he would be a lot higher up this list. Since his injury, obviously he's been back in the team this season after a sort of two long spells out. But yeah, he's maybe not been quite the same player, it's fair to say, since that injury, that first injury a couple of years ago, but. Particularly maybe even just for those first 6 months alone, Peter Hartley kind of sneaks into my top 10. At number 9, probably had quite a divisive choice, including Josh Law in the worst 10, probably even more divisive choice by including Nicky Law in the best 10. So Nicky Law is my number 9. And again, he would maybe be higher if it wasn't for basically the fact he left to go to Rangers, if I'm being brutally honest. I thought Nicky Law was a really good player, I have to say. For those first or the two seasons he was at the club, some of the football we played in general as a team was obviously fantastic. Nicky Law was often at the heart of that, whether he was played to the middle or out on the left-hand side. Scored some fantastic goals. The goal he scored at Dens Park, Tom Haley's obviously corner to the edge of the box, was still probably one of my favourite Motherwell goals, if I'm being honest. Yeah, I just thought he was a very good player. And I would much have rather he'd went down south and tried to sort of kick his career on down there rather than taking the money and going to Ibrox to play in the third or fourth tier of Scottish football. But Nicky Law anyway still gets into my top 10. And number 8 is Mark Gillespie. Obviously, I know we're not meant to include this season, but I suppose the fact he's had a very good season this year comes into my thinking when I include him in the top 10. I think Mark Gillespie's an excellent goalkeeper, I have to say. Probably quite difficult for him replacing Trevor Carson, who was obviously and still is, a fantastic goalkeeper as well. It's obviously big shoes to fill, but I think he came in, and the fact that we didn't really miss Trevor Carlson anywhere as much as we thought we would is testament to how good a goalkeeper he is, to be honest. In particular, incredible record at saving penalties, and just a generally fantastic shot stopper in general. Maybe at times a question mark over his distribution, but obviously who knows in this current climate what's going to happen or when the end of the season actually is going to be, let alone when the players that are currently under contract are going to move on or otherwise. But I think we probably will lose Mark Lesby in the near future, and obviously again we'll Trevor Carlson to come back in, but he'll be a relatively big loss to us. I think he's had an excellent year or so at Motherwell. Number seven is Stephen Jennings. Again, a bit like Nicola, I really like Stephen Jennings, and it came during a very successful spell for the club where we were regularly finishing second or third and qualifying for Europe. And again, I thought he was a huge part in that. Formed a really good midfield partnership with Keith Lasley. Sort of tenacious in the tackle, got about the park well. Just a really good player to watch, and as I say, kind of really kind of the heartbeat almost of that side at times. Again, maybe disappointed he left when he did. I'd have liked to have seen him at least stay for another year and had a crack at the European games, the Champions League against Panathinaikos that following season, but he chose to go back down south. I think he's still playing with Tranmere. Could be wrong, he certainly was until relatively recently, but Steve Jennings was another one who I thought was a terrific player and a really good part of that sort of side under Stuart McCall.
Good stuff, mate, and there is some repetition going to happen here. Now, I've got to kind of clarify my statement earlier on. I haven't included Peter Hartley or Liam Grimshaw in my top 10, and I feel pretty awful about it, to be perfectly honest. I have actually made a small change to my list while you were talking there, Gordon. But my number 10 is Tom Hatley, who is a character that perhaps divided the Motherwell support, but there's very little arguing that Tom Hatley was a very, very consistent performer for Motherwell for a number of seasons. Contributed one of the best goal celebrations in terms of the free kick in Odense, was absolutely sublime and gave us real hope that we could go on and qualify for the group stages. Of course, we weren't able to turn it around at Fir Park in the home leg, but moments like that, moments like his free kick against Rangers or his last minute winner at St Mirren from the free kick, he was a very good player. It didn't help that his dad was who he was. It didn't help that he had a child that he named Teddy and everything else. These things tend to annoy you when you're a Motherwell supporter, because we're a very, very petty bunch. But Tom Hatley was a very good player for Motherwell, and perhaps on reflection it maybe should even be higher than number 10, but contributed a lot, some really special moments from him, absolutely deserving of being in the list in some form anyway, and that's why he's scraped in at number 10 for me. Number 9, I've went for John Ruddy, who enjoyed a very good loan year at Fir Park. He's obviously went on to be an England international, a Premier League goalkeeper. At the time, though, I think he was very much cutting his teeth in the game, and he was prone to the odd mistake. He was a very, very good goalkeeper as well, though. We've been so spoiled, and with the exception of the likes of Craig Sampson and Gunnar Nielsen, it must be said, but in terms of the likes of Darren Randolph, John Ruddy, Trevor Carson, Mark Gillespie, we've had some great goalkeepers over the last 10 years. John Ruddy would be ranked right up there. He left Fir Park a much better player than he arrived, and he has continued to improve. So it's quite nice when you see a player that almost really began his journey in the game with the Motherwell going on to achieve such success. So yeah, he was a great goalkeeper. As I say, it wasn't the finished article by any stretch of the imagination, but and what was an exciting team. John Ruddy played a big part. It is quite funny to think of the 6-each game against Hibs, though, and the fact that he possibly had his worst night in a Motherwell jersey, and what was the most ridiculous game of his time at Fir Park, but certainly a very, very good goalkeeper. Number 8, I've went for Steve Jennings. Again, like yourself, I thought Jennings was an excellent, excellent footballer. I was just disappointed that we didn't get more out of him in terms of longevity and his time there. He had a great relationship with Keith Lasley in the centre of the park. That really, really good find. A really talented player. Good awareness. Strong in the tackle. He could move the ball well. Just another one that was an excellent find. Only frustration being that he didn't hang about that wee bit longer. As you've already pointed out, there was the lure of the Champions League the following season. We would have been a much stronger side with Steve Jennings in that midfield. And maybe that's something that we can look back on, the fact that we got the Panathinaikos game and then the Levante game after it. But there had to be that rebuilding job done that kind of hurt the chances somewhat. At number 7, I've went for Mark Gillespie, who, for me, I've ranked him above Trevor Carson and Stephen Robinson's signings list. For me, the best goalkeeper that we've had at the club since Darren Randolph. I think he's been absolutely outstanding from the minute that he came in for Trevor Carson last season, right throughout this season. Time and time and time again, I'll actually have my breath taken away by an individual save that he makes, a one-on-one save that he makes. He is an absolutely phenomenal goalkeeper. I think the reason that Mark Gillespie will depart Fir Park is because he's absolutely destined for bigger things in the game. I think he could go and be a number one right up to Premier League level, to be honest. I think he is that good. Now, you sit with me every week, you hear me moan about his distribution. That is the only thing that ever lets Mark Gillespie down, but I think he really is an excellent goalkeeper, and that's proven in the fact that Trevor Carson hasn't come back into the team. I'm sure when there's clamourings and the contract negotiations perhaps not going the way that Motherwell want them to, the temptation might be there to go, well, Sodgy, we're going to bring in Carson. You can spend your time on the bench. But he's such a big part of this Motherwell team. He's been integral to the fact that Motherwell are third in the league this season.
Yeah.
I think that he more than merits being number 7. And he's in some very good company in this list. So, yeah, for me, Stephen Robinson's best signing. And also in terms of, I think he's thoroughly deserving of Motherwell's number one as it stands. Okay, so we move on to number 6 to number 4, Gordon.
Yep, so for number 6, I actually had John Ruddy as well. Again, somebody who you mentioned. Looking back, possibly not sure if he should be higher than Mark Gillespie. I might be already debating whether that was the right choice or not, but again, just the fact that I thought he was a fantastic goalkeeper in his year long loan here. Someone who has went on to have a fantastic career, been in England squads, played in the Premier League. As you said, obviously he was still quite young in Roy's time and had a few sort of mistakes here and there, but just one of those players who you've obviously, since he's left the club, is kind of went on, looked on with kind of a wee bit of pride, I guess, in how well he's kind of went on. Hopefully we've had some sort of part in his career as well. Number 5, I should probably say there's a wee bit of sentimentality in my choice here, because for about 3/4 of his spell at Motherwell, he frustrated the life out of me, but I've went with Lionel Wainsworth. Just because of his sort of nature of some of the goals he scored, basically he just had tendency to score some absolute rakers, including obviously in both legs of the playoff against Rangers. the goal at Ibrox was probably one of the goals I've celebrated most in my time as a Motherwell fan. On his day, and particularly that first season when I think he was still on loan at the club, probably his most consistent. He contributed a number of goals and assists that season when we finished second. On his day, he was a fantastic player, absolutely lightning fast pace. As I said, obviously could score an assist and something, to score some fantastic goals as well. Obviously petered out as his career went on at Motherwell. And as I said, when Lionel was great, he was brilliant. When he was poor, he was awful, I guess. But just a player who I really, on his game, I just love watching, and always had a wee bit of a soft spot for. And my number four was Sean Hutchison, who, again, a player who's been on to have a really good career down south since he left. I think he's still the Millwall captain, kind of top half of the English Championship. Sean Hutchison was at times quite rash and maybe even quite cumbersome possibly at times, but you could always tell there was a decent defender, I think, in there, and he played a big part again in some of our best seasons under Stuart McCall. Sort of good centre-half partnership, firstly with Stephen Craigan, I guess, and then lastly with Steve McManus as well in his last season. I think as his time at the club progressed, he can obviously fell out the team, I think, under Craig Brown, then came back in under Stuart McCall. His last season, when we finished second, he had a really good season, a really excellent season. You could just tell he was maturing as a player and was ready to go on to the next level. The game that sticks out in my mind was the last day of the season at Pittodrie. I thought obviously we were back to the ball for about 89 minutes, at least of that game. I thought he was tremendous, a couple of really fantastic last-ditch challenges. So obviously left the club on a high note. If you want to leave the club, that's the way to do it.
Yeah,
so I was a big fan of Hutchie. He's my number four.
Great stuff, mate. I'll go with my number six then, and at six I've went for Lionel Ainsworth. Now, I'm kind of in the same boat with Lionel. He was either sublime or utterly ridiculous, or in fact it wasn't even ridiculous, it was just absent. If he wasn't fancying it, he wasn't there, and it was horrendous to watch. It was almost as if he wasn't trying, but man, when he was on his game, he was unplayable at times. He's lightning quick. He would score absolutely fantastic goals. The playoffs will cement him in terms of his legacy at Motherwell. In both games, he was utterly brilliant. Then there was the following season where he scored the crucial free kick against Kilmarnock in a game that avoided the possibility that we were going to suffer the same fate and we were going to get dragged into another potential relegation playoff. It was worth his weight in gold for us. There was the initial spell and the Willie won't he type scenario. I think that drove him on. We've seen examples of lone players that have come to Fir Park and they're so keen to make their mark and win a move, that they do perform at that level above, and maybe it drops off when they've signed the deal. Ainsworth maybe is an example of that, but there was so many special moments during his time that you're almost kind of a few years removed from it. You're able to put the bad days to the back of your mind, because I would say even despite the fact that he did have plenty of bad days, he had more good days, and he was a very special player that really lit up Fir Park in many occasions, so well deserving of his place. Above him, and you said your position was controversial, well, Nicky Law is my number five. Now, it's easy to now look back on the move to Rangers and think, well, he ruined his career and or this, that and the next thing, but in terms of the move, while I still don't understand it, from a financial point of view, Nicky Law would have benefited very much from leaving Motherwell to join Rangers, despite the fact they were down the leagues. I know Stephen, last season he featured pretty high up in 442's top football league players. he continues to be a very, very talented footballer. At Motherwell, he contributed a lot of goals, a lot of assists. He was an incredibly intelligent footballer. The end move did sour things a bit, and I think if you were recording this maybe 3 or 4 years ago, he certainly, he would maybe even feature in the worst one, just to spite him. But but the case remains, and you've already pointed it out, he was an excellent footballer, and he did do a lot in a Motherwell jersey. He just didn't make that right decision at the end, or he didn't make the right decision in the terms of our eyes, and those eyes are very, very biased. There was the kind of argument that if you go and sign for a team in the third division, as it was then, I believe, then you become a third division player. Nicky Lobbitt was never a player that should have been playing in the fourth tier of Scottish football. There's no getting away from that. He obviously made the decision to do so. He won a bit of silverware. He would have been playing in front of big crowds. Yeah, I'm sure he would have quite liked to finish their journey, or whatever they refer to it as. But yeah, Nicky Law was a big player for us, and now again he went back to Bradford, and who's he at now? He's
Exeter
with Ryan Bowman.
Ryan Bowman and Jake Taylor as well.
Yeah. So again, you see his name popping up quite a lot. I actually spoke to him last year, and I was all for the fact that it was going to be a very difficult, or it would be very negative about his time at Motherwell. He was incredibly enthusiastic about it. It's clear that he very much enjoyed his time. Yeah, you got off the phone to him, and I thought he's a very hard guy to dislike, as much as I was trying initially. But yeah, Nicky Law, a player that maybe ruined his legacy somewhat, but he was still very, very, very good. Number four, just like yourself, I've went for Sean Hutchison. Sean Hutchison was in my top three, and I dunted him down while you were given as your number 10 to your number 7. And that's just because my top three are that good. But again, Sean Hutchison came through as a basic unknown, really, in Jim Gannon's short-lived time at Fir Park. Even then, he was commanding, he's athletic. He learned a lot from Stephen Craigan, who I often say, and Stephen Craigan says it himself, actually, that you don't get as many caps as Stephen Craigan got, or as many appearances in the top league, without being a reasonably good footballer. And Stephen Craigan brought Sean Hutchison on. And then I think there was a stage as well where there was almost this kind of understanding and the kind of youthfulness and the pace as Sean Hutchison was able to bail Stephen Craigan out. And then, as you already mentioned, his final season, his partnership with Stephen McManus was a very strong one. I think his last season at Fir Park was Sean Hutchison's best season.
Yeah.
He's an English player that obviously had come to Motherwell as a youth, and I think that built up his affinity for the football club as well, which is always something we like to see, someone coming as a relative outsider, I suppose, and really getting what it means. He wore his heart in his sleeve, and as you say, the performance at Pittodrie in the final day and the sheer delight that he took from the result as well was something really special. He's a player that I still continue to look out for, just because I just love him at Fir Park. He really, really did progress, and it's good to see him having such a good career. There was a stage where it looked like Millwall could make a push for the playoffs this season, and for Sean Hutchison to captain a side, or a Millwall side, to Premier League promotion potentially, that would have been quite something, and something again that the youth coaches and the likes of Stuart McCall and Kenny Black, Jim Gannon as well, that could take great pride in the fact that his progression has been as such. Okay, we've got to the point of the top three. Three I think that we'll agree on. I'd be surprised if we don't. But it's now all down to the order, I guess.
Yeah, I'm not sure if your order will be the same as mine. Then again, it might. Yeah, this was really difficult. Not so much in terms of who the top three are, just in terms of how to place them. So at number three, I've got John Sutton. Sutton was just fantastic, really, for us in both these spells at Fir Park. I think when he first signed under Matt McGee, I suppose he'd done relatively well up here with St Mirren. Feels like quite a while ago. I can't really remember if I was particularly excited with the sign or not, but he went on to do very well under various managers, I guess. Obviously, latterly under Stuart McCall in the season we got to the Scottish Cup final 2011. With his goals in the semi-final against St Johnstone as well, he was maybe not the most polished player at times. He'd probably admit that himself, but he was certainly effective and gave you absolutely everything you had. He just ran himself into the ground every single match he played for Motherwell, to be honest. And his goal return in both spells was fantastic. It seemed, looking at his career, probably coming in, he's still playing, I think, for Morton, but so looking back on it, probably had his best spells with us and possibly also maybe St Mirren as well, but he seemed to be one of those players that just found a niche for himself at the club. Yeah, as I said, obviously his goal return was fantastic, even when he came back for the second spell. It's a shame, I guess, that I think he did a podcast with you, didn't, a few months ago, where he said it, you know, didn't really kind of work out for him under Ian Barraclough, and obviously it left after that playoff match, but even then, he left in the high. I think he scored in his last kick of the ball, didn't he, against Rangers? So.
Yeah, that's it. And I'm going to kind of break rank here a wee bit, because my number three also is John Sutton, and I agree entirely with what you've said there. In terms of his goal return as well, was absolutely sensational. He was a player that never really was blessed with a great deal of pace, was he? A penalty box striker. His contribution to the run to the 2011 Scottish Cup final was significant as well. Obviously, notwithstanding the fact that he scored a couple in the semi-final, but he had also, or he scored one in the semi-final, didn't he? But he scored a tremendous one from about 30 odd yards. The goals against Dundee United in both games against them. It was a really big player. In terms of how it ended, as you say, it was a wee bit sour. But even then, in that season, he scored the winning goal at St Mirren in a game at Christmas time.
And you, yeah, just, it was a massive goal, yeah.
Yeah, it just, time and time again, he came up with the goods when you needed him. So, yeah, he's a very special player and incredibly nice and an incredibly handsome man as well. Definitely the most handsome man in the top 10.
I was going to say, without doubt, yeah, number one on that list, without
a shadow of a doubt. Okay, mate, number two.
Number two. Don't know if this will be how you've placed them or not, but number two, I've got Louis Moult.
Yes, I have.
Is it the same? How you going? I was expecting that, but I think in a lot of people's list, probably Louis Moult, my number one. I don't want to give the game away who I've got as number one, but Louis Moult was, again, it's hard to say anything that's not already been said about his spell, Motherwell, but just a knack for great goals, important goals, you know, such a consistent goal return as well throughout every season that he was at the club. Obviously, it took a bit of a while to get going, and we've obviously spoken about the fact earlier on the podcast he was behind was Fletcher, hard to believe initially, but when he first came in, he kind of found his feet under Matt McGee. Got a regular spell on the team. It was a good partnership going with Scott McDonald, and scored some crucial goals. Kind of helped us got into the top six that season. I seen actually a thing on Twitter the other day with his two goals against Aberdeen that kind of helped clinch, or almost helped clinch, top six that season. But obviously, it seemed to just every season he was there got really important goals that helped whatever we were doing that year. The next year, obviously, it was more about keeping ourselves in the Premier League. The two goals at Accies, the one, the last minute equaliser, obviously in the scenes that followed that one at New Year, and then the game later in the season, the winner that kind of was a massive 3 points, I think, in helping us stay in the league. that year, and then obviously in these last few months, the League Cup final with the two goals against Rangers at Hampden. Again, not much has been said, but in general, just a really decent bloke, somebody that seemed to really get the club. Great relationship with the fans, worked himself into the ground as well, every single match he played. Just a really decent guy, and somebody who was a fantastic player for us, and leaves the club with, again, just some fantastic memories. And yeah, it'd be great to maybe potentially see him back at Fir Park one day.
Yeah, it certainly would be, in terms of, there's not really much to cover off that, in terms of maybe the four goals against Accies and the derby, just special player, the contribution in the semi-final against Rangers, just a game that time and time again we've come up short in these type of occasions. That while he wasn't the only man that performed that day, he was the catalyst for everything that was good. The second goal, he just had no right to score. So audacious, so full of confidence. And the noise as that ball ripples in the back of the net is just bedlam ensued. It was tremendous. It was such a shame that he didn't manage to sign off with a cup victory. He's already said in the past that he really believed that was going to be our year and we were going to do it. And to be fair, that's kind of the last real memory you've got of Louis Moten, a Motherwell jersey, because injuries followed in the final month and he never really got to say a proper farewell. I know that it was kind of rolled out a few times and he did his speech in the park and things like that. But leaving halfway through a season, it was a wee bit of a gut wrencher. You do question what would have happened if we had Louis Moten, the team going forward, and then that Scottish Cup run. But by the same token, Curtis Main came in and he obviously got a brace in the semi final, didn't he? So, yeah, just so many good memories. He started off as a relative unknown. Just even the way that after every goal that he scored and every tweet that he received that night, he would respond to everything personally. He couldn't do enough for people. He was absolutely brilliant for podcast events, charity events. He was a magnificent player, but he was also a magnificent person, and he remains that way just now. If you follow him on Twitter, you see how much he does for local charity work, and it just all seems to be so little effort to him, which is tremendous to see. So he was a role model on and off the park, and a player that we were very lucky to have. It's not quite worked out at Preston so far, but when he comes back from that injury, it'll be interesting to see where his career goes. I still think that he's got the capabilities to be a real success story there. It's just whether he gets that opportunity, I guess. So we move on to number one.
I think you probably guessed it already, but it's Michael Higden. So I guess it's hard to where to start with his spell at Motherwell. Obviously, he played for Falkirk and Mirren, and probably fair to say when Stuart McCall signed him, he was not a player that you maybe were too excited about seeing at Fir Park. He had a lot of kind of St Mirren and Falkirk fans, or maybe Falkirk fans especially, I think it's at a Pine Boardroom, stuff like that. One of that, we didn't really speak about him in glowing terms, but he started relatively slowly as well, tended to be a bit of a scapegoat occasionally for the fans, and obviously there was the infamous get up your gesture when he scored the Tannadice. But his career just at Motherwell just progressively get better as time went on. Played obviously a big part in that first season of 2011-2012, but obviously the reason he's number one is the following season, isn't it? I think it was 26 league goals, a post-war record, Scottish Player of the Year. That sort of stuff just doesn't really happen for a Motherwell player all that often. He was just, we were just lucky basically to get him, I think, potentially right at the peak of his career, and he fitted in fantastically well to what was as I've already mentioned, a really good side. Billard, arguably, certainly one of the best Motherwell sides I've seen in my time supporting the club, possibly even the best. He just didn't look like a football player at times, did he, Big Higgy? But he was so prolific, just had one of those seasons where everything he touched, even the thinking those goals up at Tannadice, the one for the 35 yards around the top back, he just seemed to be pulling goals out of nowhere that season. And I think even a wee bit of sort of the ground of folklore, obviously getting lifted the night he won the Player of the Year award as well, just probably puts him even further into the category of a Motherwell legend. But yeah, he was just two fantastic seasons. Again, can't blame him for taking an opportunity to go and play abroad, and I'm sure probably earn a good bit more money as well. It'd obviously been great to have seen him in a Motherwell shirt for longer, but when you're scoring 26 goals in a season, you have to expect as a Motherwell fan that they're not going to be around for too much longer after that. But yeah, no, he was a fantastic player, and I guess the figure point of a fantastic side at that point in time.
Yeah, he was. You're absolutely right, and I think that the thing about that second season was everything he touched turned to gold. It wasn't the same penalty box striker that he was the season before. He was scoring rakers. He contributed so much, and even the kind of the circumstances that you talked about with the Player of the Year, that just kind of all builds up the cult hero status that he had. It was just absolutely tremendous. That final season at Fir Park, I mean, it was memorable for so many reasons, and in terms of Stuart McCall just had Motherwell absolutely flying. But that season, there was the two victories over Celtic, the fact that Neil Lennon had been quite dismissive of the fact that he'd got nominated for the Player of the Year, and the water off a duck's back type celebration.
I forgot to mention that. He
came up with all the answers that season. It was a very deserving winner of the award. That's so rarely going to happen. It may be one of these things that for decades upon decades doesn't happen again, that a Motherwell player achieves that sort of success in goal scoring terms in one season. So I think that while Louis Moll and John Sutton, in fact everybody on both of our lists have contributed so greatly to the cause here, I think that Michael Higden narrowly but deservedly takes top spot.
Yeah, no, I'm glad I managed to certainly agree in that one.
Well, it was certainly the top three we managed to kind of go and replicate each other's. There are a lot of differences along the way across both the lists, mind you, but this has been good fun. As I say, it's been
a good way to spend an hour of self-isolation anyway.
Yeah, that's it. There's kind of difficulties filling the days just now. As I've emphasised in previous podcasts, I very much hope that everybody tuning in is doing okay. It's unprecedented times, obviously. We're all just kind of as uncertain as the next person. But it just starts that you take on the advice that's been given, you remain safe, if possible, remain in the house, and hopefully in the coming weeks and months the things are going to get better. I'm going to continue to produce these podcasts, hopefully until we run out of topics to discuss, but there's a few more planned for during the week. I look forward to recording those. But for tonight, Gordon, thank you very much.
Cheers, mate. Thanks for having me.
No problem at all. You've been listening to the MSC podcast. We'll be back during the week. Until then, thank you and goodbye.